Good morning. It is Wednesday, August 24th, 2016. It is 9:30, time for the weekly meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. All three commissioners are present, constituting a quorum. First item of business is adoption of the consent calendar. This week, the consent calendar only consists of the minutes of our two previous meetings. Is there a motion for approval of the consent calendar?
I move for approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Consent calendar is approved. We move on to reports. And first up, continued partnership with Community Corrections and Work Crew Program. Gentlemen, if you'd introduce yourselves and take it away.
Good morning. My name is Grant Jones. I'm the administrative corporal in the jail. I'm in charge of the work crew program, and seated next to me is Dan Schramm from Parole and Probation. He's been my partner in kind of building this outside work crew program that utilizes both inmates from the jail and parole and probation clients. So he's going to kind of give you a little basis from his perspective, and then I'll talk about mine as well.
Okay.
All right, great. Good morning. So work crew, no question, does great things for the community, lots of good agencies, lots of great things for the public. It's just been a fantastic thing. Also, Community Corrections, we have a great relationship with the Sheriff's Office and the jail in helping manage offender populations and moving people to alternative incarceration programs and just different things as they come up. We work real well together. And back in April, I was speaking with both of the jail sergeants, just kind of brainstorming ideas and just kind of visiting and talking about things. And Sergeant Graham came up with the idea. He thought, what about inmate workers that have outside clearance maybe going out on the work crew? And thought about it, had some more meetings with the jail commander and figured out we could make it a reality, and we started doing it first week of May. So far, it's been very successful. We've had 14 different inmates that have gone out for a total of 144 days, augmented with our own sanctioned parolees and probationers and out-of-county referrals and people completing court sentences and community service. So merging those two groups together. Just with the inmate workers alone, though, it's been almost 1,200 man hours in the community just in a few short months. And we were only going out just twice a week. We've just recently, last week, upped it to 3 days a week. So there'll be that much more going on. So types of jobs, obviously, we work for governments and nonprofits. So cities of Depot Bay, Newport, and Walport, inmates have been involved in jobs there. Lincoln County Public Works, facilities and maintenance, public works, and the transition center also. So for community justice and Newport Fire, special road districts, and also the school district and the state parks, which are two of our largest contracts. So it's been really, really a good, positive thing.
So from a corrections perspective, it presented a interesting challenge in that we had not traditionally checked out inmates to anybody other than correction staff. So we had to come up with a plan and a set of rules to be put in place for the parole and probation worker supervisors as well as the inmates, because they're intermingling with people that aren't in custody. They're out in their community. And so we really applied our most stringent criteria to our inmate workers, and only those that meet the lowest classification security requirements, those with the most minor history, and those that we have worked with in the past were qualified. So it's interesting that it's kind of a very almost elite group. They take their job very seriously. They understand the responsibility that's been given to them, and they take great pride in the product of their work. They very regularly come in very sweaty and very dirty, and they know that the ability for this program to continue is all dependent on them. So they do take great pride in that. It also benefits the offenders in that, especially the ones that are in custody for a long time or usually ones that are starting to transition into release, it starts to get them into a schedule or a routine that may be beneficial to them when they're released from custody. They're up by 7 in the morning, they're out of the jail and on the work crew by 8:30, and they're working by 9. So a lot of these guys, we tend to forget, you know, we're very hardworking people when they're not in custody or not kind of suffering from their demons. So, you know, people that were in the fishing industry, timber industry, carpentry, they all have a lot of skills that are very useful. And so this is a way for them to continue to show their skills and abilities. And so that's one of the things that I think keeps them focusing on producing, you know, really good work product for both the work crew and the jail and in parole and probation.
Well, this is great. I'm glad you brought this to us. When I heard this was happening, I thought it was a relatively new thing because, of course, Community Corrections has had its work crews for a long time, and I know that from time to time there have been strictly jail crews under the supervision of Sheriff's Office personnel, but this mixing is a brand new thing, and it sounds like it's been well thought out and is very effective since parole and probation does have staff to provide the in-field supervision. So it sounds like it's proving out very well. And you gave us a great list of some of the regular clients. Could you maybe give us just a few examples of some of the job projects that the crews have taken on in these recent months?
They worked on the up there at South Beach. What's the name of the Coast Hills?
They help prepare the trails for the Coast Hills Classic bike race. They've also worked on repairing the Amanda Trail down Yaha. So that was, you know, last winter that was pretty much destroyed. So their hard work brought something back to the community that I think a lot of people, including tourists, enjoy. So it is a lot more than just picking up garbage on the side of the road. They in addition to the work crew that goes out with the jail, the work crew for parole and probation also has cleared out some transient homeless camps. They've helped prepare tsunami sanctuary zones in South Beach and clean up around repeater and tower sites for emergency communications. So they actually do a very wide variety of tasks and jobs that benefit communities in maybe ways that aren't as readily apparent as, you know, picking up garbage on the side of the road, but it really does make a difference.
So if anybody listening or watching associated with a local government or a nonprofit might be interested in contracting to use the services of the crew, how do they do that?
They just contact our office.
Lincoln County Community Corrections,
yes,
in Newport.
Yes, Ken Krause is the person in charge of that program, but they can reach me or anybody, and we can get them the information they need, get them scheduled up.
Comments or questions? Commissioner Hunt?
Well, I guess, first of all, I think it's a great program. I think it's another example of, you know, thinking outside the box rather than just incarcerating the inmates and letting them serve their time and then releasing them. This is another example of many programs in the corrections area as far as trying to give the inmates some skills that improve their chances of not returning. So I think it's a great example. You answered one of my questions, the criteria for participation. Clearly, there are some individuals that we would not want to be in this program, but there's a matrix, and the lowest list, or lowest individuals as far as risk are only the ones that are allowed to participate. So I think there's a fee for use of the crew.
Yes. Yes, there is.
And it doesn't matter what mix, or there's only one grouping or category?
Yeah, they're all together. We charge $550 a day for up to 10 inmates, a foreman, a van with, you know, all the equipment, power tools, and everything that's needed. So,
but didn't we actually approve a decrease in that fee beginning July 1st?
There is if it's less than five people.
Oh, okay. Less, yeah. Okay.
Less than what? I'm
less,
sorry.
Less than five inmates or offenders.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just with this population, sometimes you never know. You might have 15 people scheduled for the day, and you have seven show up. So you just never know. Mm-hmm. That's why it's been great working with the jail, and that we know that those guys are going to be there. And then we have ones that we schedule. And then we also have walk-ins for people that are employed, and, hey, I got the day off, and this would be a good day for me to do a cruise. So yeah, so we lump them all together, and that fee obviously helps offset the expense of the work crew program for the county.
Okay. Great program.
So, Commissioner Thompson?
You ever calculate what it is by an hour for your crew? For Danpack?
I haven't divided it up, figured it out, so we're up to, you know, 10 people and whatever.
10 people, that's $50 person per day. If you work normally an 8-hour day, pretty reasonable deal.
Plus all the you know, the steel equipment, you know, the chainsaws and the hedgers and hand tools and transporting them there and back. So
yeah,
works out pretty good. I think a lot of people are real happy when they use the program. And our foremen are great. They're really conscientious and they do an excellent job.
Well, I've seen samples of the work that the inmate crew side of it is done inside of the jail. When they repainted and did the work, and it's quality work. I mean, that job would have been quality work by a contractor in there. It was excellently done. And the work they did in there a few years ago to redo the interior of the jail.
Amazing good work.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks. Anything else you'd like to share with us? We'll say thanks for the report and keep up the good work.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We have another report, Annual Review of Lincoln County Citizens Corps Coordinating Council, or LC5CERC for short, and have our three presenters come forward. And need to pull up a chair, an extra chair. So.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us this morning. And actually, we're going to let Linda do most of the talking. She is our current chairperson of our LC5 committee. And they had a lot of input in their annual report, so we'll let Linda.
They have a copy of this, right?
They should have a copy.
Great. So I'm not going to read it word for word. I'm just going to summarize what we've done this year. It's getting better and better and better, and I think even Jenny's getting excited, and we love having Carrie around. I'm going to read the first sentence. The following annual report represents the active community emergency response team chapters and Lincoln County School District Team CERT. Me from Waltport is especially proud of our teen certs in Waltport, where my husband and I are there every year helping them with their final exam, and it's just encouraging. This year we invited them to join the adult certs, so we're going to work on that too. Our cert chapter challenges have been access to liability insurance, access to ongoing continued funding, volunteer cert team leader retention and recruitment, sponsoring agency administrative support. Right now, Seal Rock is in the middle of losing their support through their fire department, so that we figure out ways around that. Our goals for the last year are 85% of our state homeland security grant goals are completed. We worked on standard operating guidelines, which I believe were presented in the last few weeks.
They will be. We're waiting for our last
signature. Okay, good. Sorry, misspoke. Awaiting county legal review. I missed that. So developing a process for application for agencies to request cert assistance. It was kind of helter-skelter everywhere. People thought we could do one thing one way, and another agency thought we could do another thing. We wanted to do strategic planning, volunteer coordination software, which we are using Vulgistics and getting that up and running. New member orientation was all over the spectrum, so we're trying to fine-tune that. And our mass notification, which Everbridge has made that wonderful, especially since Waltport has lost its siren, and reverse 911 doesn't work with tourists, so Everbridge is kind of nice. A lot of these are still in motion. Member recruitment and retention is expected to complete in July or August. The 24-month training exercise calendar is still being worked on and will be done by the end of September. And we're still working on a full inventory from all of the certs, and we're waiting on Excel to get that completed. Another one of the goals was complete initial data submission of the annual report for you guys, and I would say that's 100% completed now.
Got it on time.
And on time. And our project selection for next year, we haven't selected a project, but we have selected a grant subject, and I think I get into that later. Our strengths and activities over the last year is that we have brought on 9 new CERT train the trainers, which means we have 9 more instructors that can instruct people to become a CERT, which is huge. Because south of Newport, there's not a whole lot of trained people. So I know that Linda Engel from Seal Rock and myself from Walport both went to the training, and now we can train people down there, and with Frankie's blessing from Yale Huts, we can do Yale Huts also. So we need to do collaboration between the CERT chapters, which, again, they were all kind of all over the place, and now we have one place where they leaders can all come and discuss their common processes. And we refined the annual report, which is the last page of your report here. Our goals for the upcoming year is to fund... Our goal fund this year has been determined to be a training kit and possibly a trailer, so that we just hook up the trailer, take it to the training site, have everything we need. We don't have to borrow from different certs, get it back in time for their next training. We'll just have it to train all over the county. Getting our website coordinated with the Lincoln County website, which is still in progress, and develop a common communication disaster plan. Our communication, radio communication, ham communication is still kind of iffy, and we want to really fine-tune that. We've got a lot of really good ham people as CERTs, so we want to take advantage of that. And then finalize our grant, which is due 9/30 of 16. Our member activities are spelled out on page 3. We now have 7 active CERTs. Seal Rock has combined with Newport to go through their...
their sub-chapter of Newport.
Yes. And they'll do all their training up there. We have 176 plus members, not counting the high school, which the last 2 classes I've been at had 10 to 15 in each cert. And hopefully we can get those guys to come on to being adults, like I said. Adult certs, excuse me. And we have 85 new students trained this year. Training sessions were 100, not counting the 2 full semesters that Teen Cert does it. Our volunteer hours added up to 3,643. We had 6 exercises in the group, did 17 parades, marathons, crowds management. You mentioned the epic bike race. We worked with that. Went to 8 readiness fairs and festivals, did door-to-door outreach 10 times, assisted the Teen Cert modules 10 times, and assisted with emergency management planning 6 times. Following are the functions of an active CERT chapter. We do training, as I've specified. There's a 17-hour course that everyone takes, and the parts of that course are outlined in the rest of that paragraph. Once they've completed basic training, there's steps they have to go through to become a CERT, one of which is a background check, which the Sheriff's Department is doing for us, which is really nice, giving us a name badge with a picture on it. And activation, an agency activates us, or if we self-activate during a catastrophic, which we can. The premise of CERT is to look out for your neighbors. It's to take on 20 neighbors around you and educate them with cards that they can place in the window if they're okay, to mark the house, go into the house, mark the house for the fire department coming behind us, so that we can take off some of the burden, because they need to do the big stuff. Because like in Walport, we have very little fire employees, so, and I'm one of those too, so I know that. Emergency exercise drills to prepare, because the more you exercise and train, the more you're going to do it, just second nature. And doing community service events. We do crowd management, communications at parades and festivals, do readiness fairs, and do, I think that's my EMR, never mind, first aid stations at the gravel. Our history, we've been in place since 2007. There are 7 active chapters in place, plus 2 team certs. Taft is newly
in Walport.
Yeah, is Taft a new one? The newer one than Walport? Walport and Taft.
I think
they
were both at the same time.
Oh, okay, good. Mm-hmm. They're both our new high school, so I'm sure that Sue is anxious to bring on all the high schools, because that's a big, like our high school in Walport is the evacuation site for Walport. And having those kids, if they're in school that day, having those extra kids to take care of the kids, to take care of their school and do what they're doing. And she's also got the whole setup for the morgue and the medical and everything. So that gives us an extra layer of where places can go and feel safe and get help.
And I think the ultimate benefit of the teen cert is that we actually are building that community resiliency from the youngest generation up, and they'll carry those skills with them. And even if they decide not to stay here in Lincoln County and move on somewhere else, no matter what community they go to, they will continue to build that resiliency and that personal preparedness.
And excellent. Even Job Corps, Angel Job Corps, I talked to them at the Shelter Me Fair down there. They're even doing a part of CERT, preparing the teenagers down there for helping in the community. So that's wonderful. I'm going to conclude with the last paragraph because I think it says it all. CERT volunteers work tirelessly to help ensure trained resources are available to augment traditional public safety agencies during an emergency, but their priority is to the neighborhoods. CERT members is to the neighborhoods, period. CERT members reside in during an emergency. No, never mind. They also serve as a significant force in helping to ensure the success of numerous emergency preparedness fairs. That's what really brings people. They go through those fairs and go, oh my. And I noticed that one of the news channels in Portland is starting to carry, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And they are very active in serving the community at public events, for instance, providing crowd management during parades. Thank you.
Thank you for an excellent comprehensive report and for all your good work, Commissioner Thompson.
So you said Walport lost its siren.
Yes.
That just old maintenance on it and...
It was going off when it shouldn't.
Well,
which was creating a problem.
So
the
city of Walport chose to discontinue the use of the Walport siren, as unless it's an enunciator and it can clearly dictate what the message is to the individuals in that area, it really no longer served a purpose. Now that we have the understanding of 2 different types of tsunamis, an audible siren does not necessarily benefit those in that particular area.
And it was going off every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, so if we ever had a tsunami on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, it wouldn't have served
everybody
a purpose.
Would sit out and just the weekly test.
The boy, the crab wolf. I've been down there crabbing when that goes off.
It's a little scary.
I had many guys who'd look at me and say, oh, no limit.
The safest place to be in a tsunami is in a boat.
Exactly. Comments or questions?
A couple of questions. You made the, and this is, I guess, tangential to this subject, but you made the comment that 911 doesn't work for tourists, but...
Reverse
911. But we really do have the ability...
I can clarify that.
I'm clarifying this is I think it's important for people that may be listening realize that there is a way to contact tourists. So,
right.
Can I make one statement to clarify what
yes.
I said? What it is that a lot of the rental homes don't have landlines, so there would be no way to get to the home. But
so, Commissioner, many of our residents in Lincoln County don't understand the background at the federal side of communication, which is a new system called IPAWS, Integrated Personal Warning Alert System. So it allows those who have the credentials or the authorization, such as myself on behalf of you, to activate the cell phone towers when needed for a very specific type of emergencies. And then it basically is like your emergency alert system that comes across the radio system, the public radio. So I have the authority to activate that, disseminate a message to those individuals that don't have a landline number. But the other thing that we do too is we encourage our citizens to opt in with our citizen alert program to put in their mobile cell phone numbers or multiple addresses that they might like to have emergency information on.
So if you access the tower that way, it basically reaches any cell phone?
Any cell phone that is A, turned on.
Okay.
B, they have their emergency alert notification feature turned on.
Mm-hmm.
And then C, it is of a newer cell phone, probably within the last 5 to 6 years, If you have something way older than that, you wouldn't even have the emergency alert component in that phone.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, my point was not to correct you, but to say that there is an alternate,
yes, thank you.
alternate way that issue can be addressed or that communication can be made.
And I might just mention, and we'll be coming before the Board of Commissioners here very soon with a new module to our Citizen Alert program that we will be in partnership with our cities and the tribe. It will be considered a community engagement piece. So right now, the citizens have to opt in, address information, but there'll be a whole new feature for community engagement that many of you have been places where you just text this number and then you get information about something you're interested in. So Lincoln County and our cities and our tribal partners will now have that capability. We're looking at an implementation in October.
Yay.
So that will streamline the ability at the local level, the very local level, be able to push more information out.
Great.
So during the time, Wayne flipped open his phone. When you say flipped, he's got the old flip phone. You're the guy we worry about.
No,
yeah, he must carry the county phone, too.
Oh, good. If you're in Waldport, please bring the county phone. Because Waldport was on the Discovery Channel thing about tsunamis.
I was in a telecommunications meeting yesterday, and somebody flipped open a flip phone. The kid says, I've never seen that. Can I buy it? Can I buy a towel? So it may be valuable someday.
Well, not to take any more of your time, but I would just like, both Carrie and I would like to emphasize the CERT team, chapter leaders and their sponsoring agencies, we had that Homeland Security grant that we've been working on to help them build up their foundation and standardization, and that's been very, very effective. It's really have brought them together. We've seen a lot of growth more on the administrative side, and with your allowing them to piggyback onto our county website, they finally have a central location where anyone that's interested in CERT can come to one location, get the right information, and then we send it back out, and then, of course, the Vol-Gistics program. So through your efforts and leadership, you've really helped their sponsoring agencies boost what their capabilities are.
Glad we can do that. Commissioner Hunt, did you?
Well, I'd like to talk more about what's happening in Toledo and Yahats. I happen to live next door to a CERT individual, and she, I guess to be candid, is frustrated in that she's very interested. She feels it's important, and yet there apparently is no sponsorship there. So I guess my question in a broader sense is, what can we do to make sure that these CERT activities are available or supported throughout the entire county?
Well, it's probably Toledo and Seal Rock. Those are the two areas that their sponsoring agency chose to no longer sponsor them. And I think part of it is the liability. Whoever's the sponsoring agency needs to cover a certain amount of liability insurance for those individuals that are going out underneath their agency logo. And then also, too, the administrative side. It takes a lot of time and energy when you grab a hold of 10, 15, 20 volunteers. The background check, the application, the training, you have all of these things that need to be met. And if you don't have the administrative overhead to support that, then you shouldn't, you know, be the sponsor of that volunteer group. Those individuals that have interest in being a CERT member, they're more than welcome to join any of the other CERT, the active CERT chapters in Lincoln County. I actually live in Eddyville, and I'm a member of the Newport CERT team. So you don't have to physically reside in a particular location. You can join any CERT group. I know that the Siletz area, they've been considering with whether or not they would like to sponsor a CERT group. But, you know, their city is very small, and to incur an additional cost for the liability, and you actually have to assign someone to monitor that and be supportive in their program, it's a silent cost, but the cost is there.
Well, I guess I'm still concerned in that I think in the event of a disaster, which will happen sometime, it's going to be incumbent upon the citizens to be involved in the recovery. Government agencies will not be able to do it alone.
Well, let me point one thing out. Anyone can be a CERT member, and they don't actually have to sign up to be part of a CERT chapter. So the entire foundation of why CERT was created was that neighbors helping neighbors, that somewhere in the federal government level, we've given you a standardized training process so that you're recognized you went through the same training protocol an individual in Nebraska went through. So it doesn't matter where you go. CERT is CERT. It's the same 20 hours of training modules. So you could be a CERT member in Toledo or Siletz, go through the entire training at no cost to you, and never actually join a CERT, an active CERT group. A major catastrophe happens in your community, in your neighborhood, and you can self-activate in your neighborhood. The emphasis for us at a county government level or a fire district or city is we will not activate CERT volunteers under our incident command structure unless they are part of an active CERT group. Because we, if not, then they would be considered a spontaneous volunteer, which we manage them completely different. So we will take volunteers during catastrophic events, but they're put into a different category as a spontaneous volunteer. CERT members who are trained and aligned with an active CERT chapter, we know all of these minimum requirements are met. Liability insurance, training, background check, all of those things are done. So you can be a CERT member in your neighborhood and help your neighbors according to the national federal CERT guidelines. But if you want to be activated by a public entity, then you need to be associated with an active chapter.
I believe, is it still true that if you type in CERT as a search, it will lead you to a place where you can find a local CERT?
Yes, yeah. The FEMA website has all of your active CERTs listed, so you can go to any community and find who's an active CERT in your community.
I think this is worth additional research and discussions, but I appreciate the information. And again, the reason I have an interest is that the more people that are citizens that are trained and prepared to respond when a disaster occurs, the better we'll be able to respond.
Indeed. Thank you very much
for
the presentation. Okay, next up, report on mobile crisis grant. And of course, we know both of you, but for the benefit of the audience, if you'll introduce yourselves, and very much looking forward to hearing about this.
Good morning. I'm Cheryl Connell. I'm director for Lincoln County Health and Human Services, and to my left is Barbara Turrell, my Behavioral Health Division Director. We're here today to announce some good news. Lincoln County Health and Human Services has finally received funding from the state of Oregon in order to provide mobile crisis services. A little bit of background about this effort. 2 years ago, there was a grant opportunity through the State Health Division for a mobile crisis program. After many, many hours of preparation, getting the grant in, meeting with community partners, etc., during that two-year period, or 2 years ago, we were denied that grant. We did not get that funding. But because my public health division, or my behavioral health division director, Barbara, is very resourceful and resilient, when there was a second opportunity to make an application for mobile crisis services, she dove in. So with the help of our community partners, including the Sheriff's Department, the jail, local other law enforcement, our hospitals, we contained a very good group effort and were successful in getting the grant in, as well as then we received notice in March that we were successful and would be getting funding. We just got the funding 5 months later. So it's really something to celebrate, and I want to just make sure you have the opportunity to hear that it's happening. You know, the purpose of this grant then is going to ultimately help with, I know, Commissioner Hall, a very important initiative that you're working on, the Stepping Up Initiative, which will help to ultimately reduce the number of individuals who are in our jails that have mental health issues. Also, it's important to note that this is going to be a great safety offer safer services not only for the community and the officers that are responding to individuals in crisis, but also to the individuals themselves, because as we all know, those who are suffering from a mental health crisis and have serious mental illness concerns are more likely to be a victim of violence than a perpetrator of violence. So this is a really great day for Health and Human Services, for our county jail, for our law enforcement partners, as well as for the county as a whole. And with that, I'd like to turn over to Barbara.
So good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if you have seen this particular summary. Did you send a copy of that?
I have not received that, okay. So if we can.
There's extra copies. So this, first and foremost, was a project that involved not only the mental health side of things, but also law enforcement, the jail staff, the hospital staff. We've worked with a little bit with people involved in the LIPSC meetings, the mental health work group with the LIPSC meetings. We've also presented to APARC and MHAC, which are the local Alcohol and Drug Advisory Committee and the Mental Health Advisory Committee. So we really pulled a lot of information once we knew the money had been awarded. We also have worked pretty hard with our support staff to pull baseline data on where we stand in terms of various kinds of measurements about numbers of folks who have been referred for a crisis, who maybe didn't follow through with a crisis appointment the next day, folks who were seen in crisis who were taken directly to jail, folks who were taken by the police to the ED and the police officer had to wait, because those are our goals, is to reduce some of those referral flows, I guess you could say, and trying to really directly address crisis in the field, safety plan in the field, have the person followed much more closely when they are assigned to an appointment the next day with a counselor. The staffing for this assures that some of that will happen because it includes not only the counselor and staff, but a case manager, an RN who can help with medications and appointments with psychiatry, as well as a peer support specialist. And the peer support specialist is someone who has experience in the mental health system, usually as a consumer or a client, who comes back into the clinic and can work at a very mutual level with clients. So our task now is to hire, so that we're starting off with doing the hiring for the two crisis workers. That will increase our crisis staffing. Eventually it'll increase our crisis staffing to a team of six. So that's also something that's very important. After-hours crisis have increased greatly with the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. So we have our regular mental health crisis staff going out every night, multiple times, and multiple times on the weekends. So when that happens, they're then assigned to come back the next day, or they can take some time off. But that pulls clients out of appointments, it pulls the clinicians out of the workplace, so it's a really difficult system at the moment to manage. So hopefully having a crisis-only team will allow there to be much better client care in a number of ways. Hiring is a challenge, as you all probably know, and so I'm working with HR and with our staff to really think about what do we have to do to increase the outreach and the notification? Who would be our best resources? The mobile crisis role is someone who doesn't necessarily have crisis experience. They can be trained. It's part of the grant to have trainings not only in mental health for law enforcement, but for us to work with law enforcement also. So there's cross-training kinds of things that are going to happen as part of the grant. So, again, my biggest challenge right now is just the hiring aspect.
Great. This is fantastic. I've got several questions, and I imagine my colleagues will as well. Just some nuts and bolts of the grant. How much money and for how long and how do we sustain the service if the grant ends?
It's a immediate 2-year grant, and I believe it's $760,000 over 2 years. There is an option. Usually they have an option to, for programs that have been funded in the past, they offer an option where you get a less amount of money for the next 2 years. This year it was $500,000 for programs that had already been funded in the past. So there is some option for extended funding. We can bill for these services, so there are also would be some income from billing for crisis services.
This is so important. I mean, just last month at the National Association of Counties Conference in Long Beach, one of the committees I sat in on had a presentation about a crisis team that's been in place in a California county for something like 10 years and all kinds of stories about its success. I know Multnomah County has said that their crisis team has been doing exactly the things that you talked about, improving officer safety, improving the safety of the person dealing with mental illness, as well as community safety. So maybe just to give people a little better idea how this will work, like say if one of our deputies or city police officer in the field suspects or sees evident signs that someone is suffering a mental health crisis, how will the crisis team be deployed?
So the police officer, law enforcement, would contact the crisis worker directly. We'll have a phone contact, so they won't have to go through any kind of screening service. They just call the crisis worker, and the crisis worker will meet them in the field. And the crisis worker won't be at their house. They'll be in the clinic because their shift will be in the clinic, even though it's an after-hours shift.
Great. Comments or questions from my colleagues?
I'm interested in, is there training that's being taken by the, deputies that would be in the field to help them identify the type of situation where a crisis counselor would be beneficial?
We've had one training so far, this crisis intervention training, which is largely aimed at corrections folks. I don't know if Lieutenant Russell is still here.
She is still here.
Lieutenant Russell and I worked together to try and get mental health workers in law enforcement in Lincoln City, Newport, and Toledo to come to that training. That was 2 years ago. We were moderately successful. I think Lieutenant Russell's team were much more present than our mental health team were. We tried to do that again, but the agency that we were working with, which originally was funded through the state pulled the funding. So now we're looking at other options for that type of training. So it would be both law enforcement and mental health staff working together to cross-train, because it's not just an issue of law enforcement not having enough mental health training. It's the mental health staff understanding the law enforcement culture.
Right.
So it really has to happen coming from both directions. So that's what we're working toward now.
And then I guess I'd just clarify, in this world of technology, and of course we just heard about the flip phones, when you say mobile, you know, my first thought is, oh yeah, I've got an application on my phone and I now have mobile access to my bank account. Mm-hmm. When we talk about mobile, we're really talking about the mobility of the crisis counselor being able to get out of the office and contact that individual that may need help. On a face-to-face basis. So that's the mobility aspect.
That's right.
And to clarify, too, the mobility aspect is also the ability to go with law enforcement. We don't have that capability right now. We don't really do that. So, it's really twofold. It's reaching out into the community, but that partnership with our law enforcement community to meet them in the field or to be doing ride-alongs, is really what is a key feature of this grant. And I think that's what really has shown to be evidence-based benefits to crisis response, is to have that as one of the tools in our toolbox for crisis response.
What about the hospitals or the healthcare providers? Do they have training in this? Do they get involved in this program? I mean, it seems to me they would be a part of the
So recently they've become on both ends, so both the PCH and North Lincoln, which have different management structures, but both of those hospitals have recently become much more aware and much more responsive, I guess you could say, to what we need in the community as far as mental health services and what the hospital's response to that needs to be. It's still not, I think, where it should be, but they're more responsive now than they've ever been in my experience working with them. So that means that we have a mental health work group up at the North Lincoln Hospital that meets monthly with the emergency room staff, and there's also a meeting of the emergency room staff that happens once a month in Newport. I've been going to the North Lincoln ones, and other program managers have been going also once a month to the North Lincoln ones. I've been started going again to the PCH ones, and also we've recently had meetings with their managers to talk more about the interactions between our staff and the medical staff, because there is sometimes the emergency room staff, their focus is if it's a medical issue, if it's a broken bone, a car accident, that takes precedent. That's what the emergency room is for, in their opinion, and a mental health person, someone with mental illness, is just much more challenging for them. They do now have a room which has been state certified as a transport custody room, which basically means they can hold somebody overnight without the county coming in. The county has to come in eventually in the morning, but it's to allow the physician to create what's called a physician's hold on that individual for mental health reasons, so risk of harm to self or others.
Which is better than them being held in a cell in a jail.
Right.
And again, that room is only at the Newport Hospital. The right. Lincoln City Hospital does not have that feature, so at least we have one hospital in our county that does have that special room to allow that that continuing presence by the person in need to stay there for longer than as long as it takes, really, to get them a scene.
Let's hope that Samaritan, when they build the new hospital in Lincoln City, considers a similar room there as well. So, yes, Commissioner.
So tell me how this is working. I'm struggling here. You got six people now.
Right now we have one daytime crisis worker, and then we have a rotating schedule of master's level clinicians who have a full work day, and then they take a shift. It changes every night from 5 until 8 a.m., 5 p.m. until 8 a.m.
And then these people are coming back to work the next day.
Yes.
They've taken a night shift. It's going to be...
They're on call.
They're on call, okay. Right.
It's not a shift, it's on call.
Because I'm trying to figure out the amount of hours these people put in. You know better than I do, but it doesn't... Because it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's correct.
365 a year.
It's 365 a year, and I can't make six people make it where it figures out. How do you do it?
So the goal is to have the majority of crisis covered by a six-person team. It means they're going to have work shifts that we haven't encountered before, which is going to be a challenge.
Like regular graveyard shifts, for example?
Yeah, okay. Right. We haven't done that in mental health in the past. So that's a challenge.
Well, one of the reasons that I see when I go through reports of people that leave is because they're overworked that are in this area. Now you're going to lay another layer on top of them?
No.
It's a little bit different. Right now, as Barbara had pointed out, we have one person that's dedicated to crisis. That's all they do, but they only work during the day, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. They occasionally take an after-hour shift, but what we're having to do right now is for the after-hours crisis response, the clinicians who are seeing clients during the day, Monday through Friday, also have to sign up to take one or two shifts per month to cover after-hours crisis. What this grant will allow us to do is to have dedicated people who are working simply in crisis response, who do not see clients during the day, to provide these after-hour crisis and mobile crisis services. So that's why we're having to hire so many people with this grant, is to make affect that change so that we have staff dedicated to after-hours crisis. That's all that they do, and that will be the challenge, because we've never had anybody working graveyard shift or a swing shift as part of their regular work hours. But that's what we're going to need to be doing, and that's what we're going to be pursuing. The effect of that will have on then those individuals who are currently in the clinic during the day seeing clients by appointments, is that there will be no after-hours crisis shifts for them to cover. That's the goal. So we're really beefing up and focusing our efforts on that after-hours crisis to develop not only the staff proficiency, but to be able then to better meet our community mental health needs by clinic appointments, by not having those individuals who are seeing clients in clinic have to also then do the after-hours crisis. That's the goal.
Okay. Goals and being able to accomplish. This looks like it may work the way you describe it, but still, it's a lot of work out there for a limited number of people.
Well, and again, you know, eventually the goal, if we're successful in our hiring and training purposes and our collaboration with our community partners, you know, the goal is to reduce the amount of crisis experienced in the community by those who have mental illness. And so, you know, if we can shore up some of our other service delivery systems, like having more access to appointments during the day, you know, we will see that amount of after-hours crisis decrease. And some other things that we're doing with our clinics, like our services in mental health, like our our assertive community treatment and our AIM High program. Working with this program, we're trying to reduce the number of individuals who experience crisis in the community, because we're out there preventing that from happening. We will never not have any after-hours crisis shifts, but we're addressing it, and in particular, you know, with what happens in the jail, making sure that those individuals, as many as possible, can stay out of that system and the trouble that that provides for everyone is a very important part of this as well. So it's a big lift, and it's very innovative and cutting edge for Lincoln County, and I know that you will support that, because you all support the need for this happening in the community.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I wish you the best. I hope this works out great.
Well, so, what we may end up doing is we may have to eventually add to that crisis team.
That's what I'm wondering.
That's kind of what your question is. Yeah. And so part of what's not on this is the fact that we have budgeted extra positions for 16-17, so that will help. I'm very aware that 6-person team is really the minimum that we're going to be able to use. Mm-hmm. And so we're working right now to figure out, okay, what would those shifts look like, and how do you create it so that it's fair for all those people on that team, so that one person or two people aren't always doing the graveyard shifts, so maybe we can roll people around. So that's one thing. And
so Doug asked a question, Barbara, you. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of respect for what you do. But he asked a question, and that's the grant. What's the chances of this grant hanging around for long term?
Past the 4 years, yeah. So it's a 2-year funding grant with an extension. Well, it's kind of a question that's tied probably to the election, is my guess, because I don't know, you know, I don't know how far ahead in time state funding goes. Nobody knows. Yeah. So we'll have some options in terms of our ability to use IHN funding. You know, the mental health capitation system will provide some funding. We also were paid for case management through that system and the medication system. So I think one of the things that directors in other counties have told me is that the best use of money in a county for mental health is to pay for crisis, that is actually the most financially smart decision to make. And we've never really focused on crisis, because I think we've thought of the whole mental health service system as being what our focus is, and not just crisis. But I think it's pretty clear that what's costing us the most, not only us, but the jail and the hospitals the most, are crisis. It's crisis.
Exactly. The one thing that gives me hope, Commissioner Thompson, and I know there's no guarantees, is that you talk to people about this in Salem, or you hear the discussion coming out of Washington, and it's truly become a bipartisan issue. You hear people, I've heard very conservative Republicans, very liberal Democrats, and folks all in between, you know, saying that this is a broken system, an abysmally underfunded system. What we're doing now is not good for the patients. It's an unfair and unneeded burden on law enforcement, and we've got to focus on fixing it. And that is really transcending party labels.
One other thing I'd like to add to specific to Oregon is that you may have heard of this. The U.S. Department of Justice entered into an agreement with the state of Oregon regarding compliance with the Olmstead Act. That has to do with civil rights for those individuals who have serious and persistent mental illness. So the state has, in the last several years, been working with U.S. DOJ on that settlement. They recently announced a new agreement, and a lot of that has to do with mental health services, especially around crisis services. And so I think that the state now, because the feds are requiring it, are really going to have to be focusing more resources, because they have to be in compliance with this, with the Olmstead Act and the settlement that they had. So that's another piece of this sustainability perhaps happening. But I agree with Barbara. I mean, it depends on what happens at the federal level in this next election cycle.
Okay. Another question. You mentioned already, Barbara, that we're just gearing up to do the recruitment, and that we are in a challenging recruiting environment. But do you even have a soft target date for launch of the team, or that's dependent on the success of our recruiting?
It's changed because it took so long for the funding to actually...
Right, the five-month lag between the announcement and the arrival.
Yeah, so I would say 3 months to actually have at least candidates submitting applications, mm-hmm. going through all the hiring process and being approved is the earliest. I think I put on the grant itself, I think January 1 was a deadline for actually implementing. So
January 1 of 17, but it'll probably be sometime after the first of the year,
right.
Realistically, I would think.
There are things we can do before people come mm-hmm. on board, like the training. So mm-hmm. there is... It isn't that we can't do anything. It's just mm-hmm. frustrating to have to wait. And okay. the hiring situation is definitely frustrating for me.
Right. Well, thank you for the report. Thank you for this important news.
I have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Barbara,
for
you
sure.
have quite a collection of letters after your name. You've obviously earned some recognition certificates. I'd be interested in the explanation of all those.
So I'm a licensed professional counselor. I'm a certified alcohol and drug counselor 3, which is the highest level. I'm a certified gambling addictions counselor level 2, which is the highest level. I'm a registered dance movement therapist.
I'm sorry, what was the last one?
Registered dance movement therapist.
Okay, that's one.
So it's kind of like expressive therapies, art, yeah. music therapy, only this is using dance or movement as a way to work with, it's usually used with children, but it's also used with adults.
Well, I was thinking of the therapeutic writing, mm-hmm, you talked about dance movement, that came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
All right, well.
Or the fact that the jail has introduced yoga.
Right, that would be considered movement therapy, for example.
Good mm-hmm. work. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Belmont, you have a report for
I
us.
Do.
Under reports.
Commissioners, we've been in the process for some months, actually, of selecting the new personnel director, our personnel director head, retired or at least reduced to 3 hours no longer working for us, and we've been in the process of selecting a new personnel director. We utilize the services of Profman, a consultant who's actually done a number of recruitments in Lincoln County. Most recently, recruited the new city administrator in Yawhans, participated in the process. So we selected some candidates. We've conducted the interviews on that, and we reached a decision on a final candidate. That candidate's under background reviews and reference checks. And at this point, we're ready to make the offer. So I just wanted to update you on that. We hope to come back to you, actually. And I don't want to release the name yet since we haven't had the full conversation with the selected candidate to make sure that person's going to come on board. But we're at the point where I'm hoping by next Wednesday's meeting we'll make the announcement of who the new personnel director is in Lincoln County.
Great. Good news. Okay, now commissioner reports. And I will start off by celebrating a very successful Lincoln County Fair. And certainly hats off to a lot of people, but it has to start with Todd and Michelle at OSU Extension, the fair producers. Last year they put together a great fair in just 5 months lead time. This year they had a year's lead time, and I really think it showed. Certainly we had ideal cooperative weather, warm and sunny here for most of the time, stiflingly hot heat in the valley, and on Saturday especially. I talked to several people who came over here specifically to escape the heat, and when they discovered there was a free fair going on, they decided to check it out. Got a lot of good feedback. I was surprised actually by the number of people who complimented the two new outdoor tents that we purchased for the fair, and that they saw our efforts to clean up and make the grounds a bit more attractive and functional in preparation for our greater redevelopment, which will be materializing in the years ahead. So, you know, the grounds were packed, educational exhibits, vendors, entertainment, fair food, two barns full of animals, pony rides, rodeo, monster truck rides, helicopter rides, everywhere you turn. Hopefully, not everything appealing to everybody, but hopefully something for everyone, and I think the crowds reflected that.
Yep. So, my report.
Yes, sir.
Are you done?
Yes, sir.
Yesterday I went up and met at the cable landing site in Pacific City, which is actually part of our telecommunications system. We're looking at new cables coming in there, and then there's another big one that's coming in up there too, so there's two more cables coming in there. But COSCOM has made a much more high-speed resilient backbone to the system, which just helps us in Lincoln County, and so I was happy to see that. And of course, when you're talking about therapists, I was and I was going like, well, PT therapist to show behind my name. Clinical therapist.
These two guys. Very good. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Commissioner Hunt, anything to report?
Well, I might report that yesterday on my way to Lincoln City, I stopped both on the way up and the way back at the command center post for the what is now called the 2500 Road Fire, which is generally a couple of miles southeast of Depot Bay. The last report I had this morning indicates that I believe the fire has been contained. There are roughly 250 firefighters. The fire's being managed by the Department of Oregon Forestry. All of our local resources are available in support, but not being utilized at this time. Again, the fire has been contained. There is concern with the predicted weather of potentially high winds and eastern winds when it's dry out there. But at this time, there are no plans for evacuations and no structures are in danger. So I had an opportunity to stop on the way up and the way back to check on those activities. And at this point, things seem to be relatively under control.
Very good.
Bill, you might want to mention something about the fair, too. I was impressed this year by the amount of people that showed up for the free hamburger.
Oh, yes, that's right. The senior barbecue, hot dogs and hamburgers served by Yaquina Bay Communications, and you and I shared duties as the condiment men.
Yes.
And
Roland staff was there.
Yep.
And I was just like, I've been to several of those over the years, but that line was
Well, they said last year they served the most hot dogs and hamburgers ever, and they broke the record this year. People have been asking me about an attendance number, and we really don't have a good estimate yet because, you know, it's free admission, all the gates open, and they were trying to do some modeling just based on counting at the front gate. And I think that Todd told me that that showed a slight decline for Friday and Saturday, but he thinks, you know, that's not effective methodology because the food vendors told him their Friday Saturday business was up by 30% over last year. So he said, obviously, 5% fewer people are not buying 30% more food. So, and I think if you just looked around, the grounds were packed.
It looks like there was a lot more.
Yeah, things did go into a little bit of a lull Friday afternoon after the barbecue was over and people were still at work. But then once people got off work Friday, there was another good surge Friday evening. And Saturday was especially busy. It's always the busiest day of the fair, but then good steady crowds on Sunday as well. So what a great, you know, just a great, as somebody said to me, you know, all the digital age is wonderful, nice that we can stay in touch with each other, stay in touch with the world with these things, but still, nothing beats coming together at the same time, in the same place, seeing your friends, neighbors, meeting new people, the true sense of community, and I think that's what that event's all about.
I visited the fair on Saturday and certainly experienced positive environment, a friendly environment, lots of people, and I would have been happy to assist in serving the record number of hamburgers or hot dogs, but I was participating in a booster fundraising activity, so next year I'll see if I can.
Just to make it politically clear, you were golfing?
I was golfing, but
it was a worthy cause.
It was to be totally clear, it was the Newport Booster fundraiser, and it's one of their primary fundraising events.
It's a good event, too.
It was hot. So. But I did make the fair on Saturday, and also I attended the Wooden Boat Show in Toledo on Sunday, so it was an active 3 days.
Excellent. Now's the time when we ask for constituent input. Any constituent can address us on any topic. For up to 5 minutes. Hearing none, we do not have an executive session today, correct, Mr. Belmont? We'll reconvene 1 week from today, Wednesday, August 31st, 9:30, right here at the courthouse in Newport.